Hello,
Rosanna.
How's it going?
It is going well, and how are you?
Oh, pretty good.
Yeah.
Nice to talk with you.
Yes, it's great to meet you finally. I've seen so many posts, so many of your books, so I'm very thankful you accepted, not knowing anything about me. So thank you for your, you know, the most important gift that we give is our time. And so thank you for extending that to me and the listeners.
Thank you for asking me. And I love having these conversations. And from what I've heard of your podcast, it sounds like a really beautiful thing. So happy to be part of it.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome to the Lift Oneself podcast, Farzana. I am so thankful you're here with me.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Will you take a breath with me?
Mm-hmm.
Let's close our eyes and begin breathing in and out through our noses. And just watch your breath go in and out and allow yourself to drop into the body. Just keep focusing on your breath and dropping deeper into the body. And I'm going to ask you to create an intention for the podcast. I'm going to ask you to create it at the bottom of your stomach and just keep focusing on your breath. And when it's ready, I'm going to ask you to release that intention and let it rise up into your nervous system, passing your heart, going up into your neck, and blooming into your brain, into your mind. While still focusing on your breath, allowing that intention to have roots and blossom, and just being here in the moment, opening up your heart. And when you're ready, gently open your eyes. How's your heart doing?
I was actually thinking about that question just before we started, right? Because I feel like my heart is in all kinds of places at different points in time. And what I was really feeling just now was like kindness to self. So that seems like a nice place to be in.
It is. It is. Mm-hmm. We can extend it so much externally and we forget that everything comes from the inside out. And it's to be with that kindness. And that means acceptance of all of our emotions, all of our experiences, and not just doing a la carte of picking and choosing which we want. It's really accepting the whole of our experience. And there's some dense parts and there's some really sucky parts.
Yes.
Yet having acceptance for that and not just pushing it away, I think allows us to connect into our humanity and allows us to be interconnected with each other and be able to hold space.
Yes. We're all the things all the time, right?
Mm-hmm. And not just always put on a, you know, for myself, I think there's a little bit too much of positivity toxicity where everybody's just think positive, think this. And it's like, you know, when you're going through grief, you have to be with the anger, the frustration, the uncertainty, and the sadness, the loss, and to be like, oh, just see the positive side. It's like, can I just be human? Can you allow me just to be human and go through this process? Mm-hmm. Like, let it suck. Let me hurt. Let my heart break. Let it all be so that I can mend it. Yet just to always think everything's positive. It's like, you're doing a real disservice for some people's journey of healing. I believe anyways. And what I've experienced in my own experience. And so I just want to create more spaces where people can just be open, be transparent in safe spaces, because that's not always the case, because it depends on who you're around and how much they're able to listen to themselves, to be able to offer a space to listen to you and witness the pain. Mm-hmm. I want to ask, could you describe who Farzana is to the listeners?
Mm-hmm. I was just reflecting on what you just said before all of that. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get some free therapy today. Isn't that nice?
I get that a lot.
So thanks. So who am I? So let me tell you about my day a little bit, maybe. So I'm a writer. I'm a creative person. I write poetry and fiction, and that's how I create my morning. And in the afternoon, I'm a psychotherapist, and I'm also a partner, and I do activism, and I, you know, like to be a good friend. Who else am I? I am a person who came to Canada with my family when I was 6 months old. So grew up here, and always with a little bit of a sense of dislocation, because that kind of stays with you. I'm also a spiritual seeker. It's one of the things that I think gives my life a lot of meaning. I like to read tarot cards. I love to listen to spiritual podcasts. I like to think about all of the forces that are there helping us that we can't see, mm-hmm. or that I can't see anyway.
Yeah. I always remind myself, what I see, I will no longer see. And what I cannot see, I will see. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, there's a frequency, there's an energy that if you allow yourself to tap into, it's palpable. You can feel it. You can see it. And it's a beautiful energy to be able to connect into. And, you know, I always have to remind myself also that I'm in the world, but I'm not of it. Mm-hmm. But yet I'm a part of the world. All my body and all this matter came from the world. And so as much as there's nature and there's, you know, devastation with natural disasters and stuff, I always have to remind myself, I'm like, you're a part of this energy. Don't separate yourself from it. Mm-hmm. And also honor the immense power of it. Mm-hmm. And know that you're a part of it. So if you're a part of it, you're able to tap into that energy also.
Another way that sometimes people talk about that is that we're, you know, spirit energy having human experience. It is nice to remember that piece of things, because we can be so in the material world all the time, right?
Yeah, we're bombarded with it all the time. And so to find our ways to ground and not be in that monkey mind looping, especially when, you know, the limbic system is going and the nervous system is activated. It's like fight or flight. You're trying to find, and it's like, wait, let me face the fear. Let me go through it. And what are the grounding parts that will, you know, regulate myself and be able to be in the stillness so I can find the solutions, not just trying to grasp at security and safety, which is needed in this world. I'm not negating that. I just believe sometimes that we're bombarded with so much media news outlets that produce a lot of fear that isn't even ours. Like intaking so much about the world that I'm sensitive, and I acknowledge that I'm sensitive, and to see the suffering that goes on around the world, it's a lot for any human to intake. And it's a lot of stuff that we're not able to really take direct action with. Mm-hmm. We do advocating, we speak and everything else. Yet in that, it's like, okay, am I in my own personal world?
Yeah.
Am I able to take the direct actions to, you know, be the change from inside, not just telling everybody else to change, which is easy to do, to tell and point and everything. Yet from what I know is changes from the inside out in our actions. You recently created a book, which is called You Still Look the Same. Yes, the poetry book, You Still Look the Same. And it's a moving collection of poetry about navigating midlife, and there's humor and about work also. So can you give us a sneak peek of what brought you into writing this poetry and, you know, what helped you navigate, you know, writing this through a pandemic?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been writing poetry my whole life. It was one of the easy forms of writing for me as I was a young person. And, but, you know, when I became more of a writer, I focused more on novels. I really like reading novels as well. So, you know, I like that form. And so it wasn't until recently that I collected all of the poems that I had written. And a lot of them have been written in the last decade in this poetry collection. And I think that I needed to have written the other books, the four novels, to have to really feel a sense of security in my voice, to know that my voice matters, and that I can have faith that I can put this work out into the world. So this is my most personal book. The novels, while they had elements of me in there, you know, they're works of fiction with characters and, you know, living, you know, experiences that I haven't lived. But the poetry is memoir-ish. And I think I needed to have gone through writing those four other books to get here to really feel like, yes, it's time, I can do this. And so most of the poems were written or rewritten in my 40s. I'm 51 now. And this was a decade that really had a lot of challenge in it. I mean, every decade has, and, you know, challenges continue to happen. But a lot happened in my 40s. I went through a breakup of a long-term relationship. And then I started dating, really dating for the first time in my life, like really like going out on dates. And I was doing that all through online dating as well, which was like a real trip. And then I had old trauma.
I have not even touched this online dating thing. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how to do that.
Skip it if you can. Although, you know, there were gifts from it too. I also had old trauma that surfaced and led to some activism in writing my last novel that came out in 2020. And then I fell in love, and, you know, that's a beautiful experience, but also comes with all kinds of challenge, right? When you're in a new relationship and then you're having to look again at, oh, here's me, here's my patterns. I'm doing it again. What do I want to change? What do I want to be different this time around? So all of that happened in this last decade and fed this poetry collection that is, you know, in four different sections. There's loss, middle age, self-searching, trauma, and then healing. And all of this had happened also in the context of perimenopause, which we don't talk enough about, but it's like quite an intense experience too that I'm still going through.
Yes. Because there's not enough education on it. There's not enough, you know, data. There's not enough research on it because it wasn't given any attention in the medical field. So I'm thankful that now people are championing and making sure that it's a priority and to have a better understanding and not just labeling women as crazy and this and your age. And it's almost like you're shelved. And it's like, no, like I still have life and I still want to be able to interact with my body and understand that it's not just all in my head. There's chemical changes that are going on, and these hot flashes and these mood swings that are going on. It's because of chemical adjustments. And don't just dismiss me that, well, just take this medication or just stand in a corner or just deal with it. It's like, give me some information so that I can actually interact with myself internally, because I'm going through perimenopause also. And so, and I just turned 49 on Wednesday. And so it's like, okay, I'm young and I'm like, I still want my estrogen. So how am I, you know, going to navigate yet also, you know, honor this body that's changing and respect it and not be angry that what I had before isn't here. And that's a type of grief that we need to speak about also, I think, of really interacting with ourselves sexually, interacting with our moods, who we want to show up now as, and all these different, you know, questions that I don't think we were given ourselves permission and even held proper spaces to speak about these things. So I'm with you on bringing, you know, these discussions that need depth that you're not going to get in the mainstream and you're not going to get in your doctor's offices and everything else, because
it's so, you know, it's so sad you don't get it in your doctor's office. So many doctors are just so misinformed.
And they don't have time because, you know, if you see how the medical system is set up, it's like 15 minutes. And most times they are not even able to do any active listening. They're just trying to figure out, well, what's the prescription to give you for whatever symptoms you're giving. And it's like, you're not even having a better understanding of seeing me as the individual. You're just labeling because of what statistics, and you're not really listening or being attuned to in depth of, you know, what does my life look like? What are things that could have impacts on me and everything else?
Look inside yourself. Can you see beyond your mind? Can you shed a light on the treasure that you are?
You were recently in my hometown, Sudbury. So I was born in Sudbury. So I saw that you were there. And you got to explore the Big Nickel. And did you get to go to Science North?
I went. Is that where the Big Nickel is? No. I didn't get to go inside anyway. No. It was a very quick trip. It was for Wordstock Sudbury, which is a lovely literary festival that happens there. So, no, I got to take in kind of like the beauty of, you know, that whole region, which is just so lovely, and then did the literary stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw that you're in little places. Science North is the museum. So it's by Laurentian University. What I love, that is one of my top museums because it's very interactive and it's an octagon in glass. So you're going up in circular and you're able to interact with the animals and interact with science, and they use your body with the science. So really understanding science in a very profound way. So I really appreciate that museum, especially for the young little humans to be tactile and not be in a museum where you can't touch and you're supposed to just look like you're interactive with it. So you understand what is being passed on as education and knowledge to you, so you can relate. How has this book been received by people?
Well, I'm getting a lot of comments just around people feeling like they can relate. And I think that's what happens with poetry often, right? Like you might have one or two or maybe more poems that just kind of hit you in a very visceral kind of way. It might be a punch to the gut, or it might be something that just helps you to tap into, you know, some deeper feelings and some deeper experience. So that's what I'm encountering, people telling me that. And I'm so glad for that, because that's what I want when I'm reading poetry. And that's what I hope to, you know, put out into the world, is something that people can, you know, use to open up something for themselves. And I intentionally made this poetry collection quite accessible, meaning that it's not experimental poetry, for example. It's more lyric, it's more storytelling kind of poetry, which I think helps a lot of people enter. So many of us were taught to be intimidated by poetry, to feel stupid that we weren't getting what the author was trying to say. And certainly there may be some poems that people aren't really sure what I'm saying, and that's okay. But I think it's helpful when we can enter the poetry in a way that helps us maybe deepen our own experience of something.
For me, what I see as poetry is inviting you to allow your curiosity to explore. And that even though we may have a way to write, it's to allow the honor of somebody else to take it into another form and another way to relate to it into their experiences. You mentioned that this is all very personal work. So how has that been, allowing yourself to be seen by people through these collections of poetry, personal experiences and thoughts?
You know, I think what happened for me was, so my fourth novel, Seven, that came out in 2020, it's a work of fiction, but it was my most maybe vulnerable piece of fiction. The reason for that being is that it's about a form of patriarchal violence that happens in the community that I'm from. And often what happens, even if you're writing a novel, which is fiction, there will be lots of questions about you as an author and your connection to the work. And I knew that this was coming. It was the, you know, I wasn't new at promoting work by that point. And so I had to really think about how I wanted to answer interviewers' questions about that book and whether I wanted to come out as a survivor as well. So what I won't get into too much detail just because it can trigger people, but what I'm talking about is a form of female genital mutilation / cutting that happens in my community. And so I did all this preparatory work to get ready to promote that book around what were my boundaries? What was I going to share? How was I going to share it? What things am I not going to share? How was I going to take care of myself? How was I going to pace all of this? And I went back to therapy. All of that was so important in the preparation. And so I had a couple of years of promoting a book, but also talking about a really hard subject and something that was quite personal to me. So by the time I was ready to promote You Still Look the Same, I was kind of like, well, whatever. I've been laid bare by this other book. I think I can talk about perimenopause. I think I can talk about sorrow. I think I can talk about breakups. I've already been talking about FGMC. So like, and also at some point, I think once, you know, I think some of it comes with age, right? That whole, I don't give a crap anymore.
Yeah. Right?
What people think. I do and I don't, you know.
Yeah, it's a funny balance. Day. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I was also reaching that stage of my writing life where I was like, whatever, let's go. Let's just go.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing you say is you've let go of the mask and allowing for mm-hmm. Xana just to be seen and no longer feeling mm-hmm. afraid or to hide, to feel a sense of dimming yourself to belong in society of the judgments and the speculations and the comments and everything. And it's like, you know what? I accept me, and who wants to be around will be around, and who doesn't, I don't need them anyways. So let me walk yes. my path without having to put on these masks and these garments just to impress other people or feel a sense of belonging.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, those masks were there for all of what you just said, the belonging and all of that. There was also a really important mask that I was carrying for a while around being a therapist. So I've been doing this work for a long time. And, you know, before social media, we were not showing ourselves in public at all. And even, you know, I think it's only been in recent years that you're seeing the Instagram therapists out there who are being a bit more personal and less cloaked. But when I started doing psychotherapy, there was very much this belief that, you know, we weren't supposed to show our clients much of ourselves because we otherwise that would interfere with the work. I think that's beginning to change. And, you know, we do that with boundaries and so on. But back then, I really grappled with, how do I be like a private person as a psychotherapist while also being a public person in the world trying to promote myself as an author? And so I think that there was a lot of struggle that was happening until I let go of all of that. Now, if clients read my books and want to talk about it and, you know, want to talk about like transference or whatever, we'll just talk about all of that. And that's okay. It's better than hiding or trying to keep this artificial mask on.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing you say too, is that you're pushing away this, because I think sometimes with therapy, there's this hierarchy where the mm-hmm. professional knows all and then you just have the client. So there's this hierarchy. Yet for healing, I believe it's supposed to be an even ground and that it's humanity meeting each other, not just, you know, a book that has diagnoses and, you know, mm-hmm. it has its part. Yet I think with true healing is that human connection and being able to mm-hmm. relate with somebody that I feel safe to be vulnerable with you and that I don't mm-hmm. put you on a pedestal, because that transference and that putting somebody on a pedestal, that can do a lot of damage to somebody. And I'm thankful that you're doing that inner work and breaking a path for yourself. That mm-hmm. seems like it's, you know, bringing a lot of abundance for yourself and a lot of wholeness mm-hmm. for you of having that, you know, self-love and kindness mm-hmm. of, you know what, I'm going to do it the way that feels comfortable for me. Although there are these parameters and red tape with the profession, it's like, what is it that I want to bring forth? And from what I'm hearing in this interaction and from the books that you have written is that you want to bring forth healing. And to bring forth healing is allowing there to be dialogue and not just a one-way conversation, that it's a two-way conversation that we can share, you know, the intimate parts, the vulnerable parts. And I thank you for that work Like that was if some listeners may not realize of how in depth that is for, you know, a therapist, a psychologist, anybody in the mental health profession to do that inner work and how you're going to present yourself out into the public and with people is a challenge. So again, like I say, thank you for that work that you've done because we benefit from it.
Right. Yeah, it is. And it is work, right? Because there are these constraints and, you know, boundaries are necessary and all of that. But like, I remember even in my early 40s, going on, you know, I was doing online dating and, you know, you need to put a photo up, you need to write some information about yourself if you're going to try to attract, you know, the sort of people you want to attract. And back then, the guidance from our college, I'm a part of the social work college, was that you're not even supposed to online date because that's too much exposure to the public and, you know, it can impact, you know, perception and all of that. And, you know, that was one of those moments in time when I thought, well, that has to be crap because we're supposed to live full lives. Online dating is incredibly popular with people. we need to have our own lives, but we also need to just be in the world living a life to understand what the experiences are out there. And of course, we're not going to share every single experience with our clients or them with us, but like to say to a therapist, you must limit your life to something very private and constricted because you're supposed to be some version of a person that seems professional. This has to be ridiculous, right? Like it just has to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back then they were also saying that we weren't supposed to be on social media.
Yeah.
I think that's changed since and they have new guidance around that, but yeah, I actually think that often our governing bodies around this work are 10 years behind real life.
They are, and from my opinion, anyways.
And, my little rant.
I honor you for, you know, it's, I guess you could be a little bit rebellious against what the rules are. Yet I'm thankful that you are serving your needs as a human being and being able to be the best therapist you can be. And that is to be in the world and, you know, experience the things that other people are with boundaries. Like you're able to associate with people and not cross boundaries, yet not be in this kind of perfection kind of world that I do no wrong, I do no mistakes, and I follow this, and I'm more esteemed than you are. It's like, well, how are you going to be able to relate to the people if you only see the world in one way? And then you're going to have judgments and find faults in people because you haven't actually walked the walk and really experienced the things. And so thank you for navigating that and going through that, because that's no easy, people, if listeners really understand that this is no easy task to navigate through for yourself and to, you know, make a judgment of my profession, my personal life, and why does it have to be so separate and divided and compartmentalized? Like I'm a whole person. And exactly, so how do I support my needs? So thank you for that, Farzana. Like I'm honored for that because I know us as a society, we benefit from those people that are, you know, creating their own path of how do I use these rules to implement it in a way that I can serve healing and be the best human being that I can be on this planet.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, our work gets so much better and deeper the more we work on ourselves, right?
Yeah.
It's just how it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to just dive into, because you spoke about seven, can you give the listeners a little bit of context and detail about this very impactful book? It is a topic, like you said, there are triggers that some people may have by listening to this, because it may be that they're a survivor or they know somebody of it that have survived from it. Can you give the listeners a little bit of context of what allowed you to do the fiction, not come out and, you know, directly speak your story, but use this storytelling to bring awareness to what people and what women go through, and men too, because, you know, when you partner up with somebody, you're going to experience the traumas and the mm-hmm. sadness and the grief and all that stuff that goes on. Can you give the listeners a little bit of a peek of what brought forth Seven and why you chose to bring up the story?
Well, you know, so what happened for me was that, you know, often beginning novels is a little bit of magic, right? So I had been involved in some activism, a group called We Speak Out that works with people from my own community around this issue. It's a global group, but most of the work we're doing is centered around our community in India. And so I had been really involved in this activism, and then I was starting to have my own body memories around it all. It was all very suppressed trauma for me, nightmares, going back to therapy, trying to figure out all of this stuff. And while all of that was happening, I was kind of waking up with these like fully formed fictional scenes that I was scribbling down in the morning. It was a very emotionally chaotic time because I was waking up to like dozens of messages on WhatsApp from the group, the activist group I was part of, dealing with my own emotional turbulence. And then I have to scribble all this stuff down. And by the time I had about 20 of those scenes, I was like, oh crap, I've got a book here. I've got a novel. And the reason why I said, oh crap, was I hadn't really felt prepared to jump in on that level. But, you know, I also know from my creative practice that when it's coming, it's coming. So, you know, what are you going to do? So, by the time I transcribed that, it really, the characters were with me and I was moving forward with it. And I blended in some of the reality of the issue and the activism, which was really developing at that time, into the book, and gave the character some of the tasks that needed to be done around understanding her own process and healing and so on. And all of that came from my own experience, but also listening to the experiences of many of my comrades. We really used one another as peer support back then. And so I heard a lot of different stories. So that's what built that book, really. And then there are also aspirational or imaginative aspects in there. I end the book very much in an aspirational way, imagining what could be. I also blended in, so the year prior to that, in 2014, before I started writing the book, I had been doing some research about one of my great-great-grandfathers, who was kind of a big figure in my family, one of these rags-to-riches, you know, kind of stories. And so I didn't get to learn enough about him, just really the tropes. So I thought, well, you know, I really love to find a way to blend in what I have learned about him into this novel as well. So the narrative goes back and forth between a 40-year-old woman who is grappling with all of this stuff and this man who is her great-great-grandfather, moving through history and the links between what would have been happening to him in 1920 and what was happening to her in 2020. So it's also a book about inheritance and legacy, because this form of trauma really is inherited over, you know, it's intergenerational trauma.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. And thank you again for, you know, doing this warrior work, to bringing forth mm-hmm. these stories that are, you know, placed in the dark. And so many aren't able to really, you know, do the healing because they don't have the space to actually be honest and not be scorned about it, or not feel like it's an inconvenience that people don't want to hear this stuff. And mm-hmm. to also advocate for the next generation that we can discontinue doing these types of traditions and having these mm-hmm. ideologies of, you know, women have gone through so much in our experiences, and I'm very thankful that we are now being able, not that it's now, it's just we're having more awareness and we're being united in strength that we can say no more. I really am, you know, at the heart of Iran and the way that people are standing up with that, this regime. And I do believe that there are going to be some empires that are going to crumble. And in that, you know, there's going to be, as much as there's liberation, there's still going to be challenges to go through. Yet I thank you for doing this, where your work in bringing forth your own pain and wounds to be seen out in the public, yet which will help other people to start to address their own traumas and do their own healing. It's truly warrior work.
You know, one of the interesting things that happened. So, you know, when you promote a novel, like, you expect to do some talking about the issues and all of that. But what I didn't expect with this book was just how many requests for, like, webinars and educational things people had for me. And I think I didn't expect that, because it is such a taboo issue. It makes people really queasy for good reason. People feel very uncomfortable addressing it. They worry that they're going to be racist or something if they will, you know, if they want to critique, you know, a social norm that is happening in someone else's community. So I really didn't expect that people would want to talk about it that much. I really thought that they'd want to talk about the novel on the level, the characters and the story and the settings, and, you know, which I love talking about too. But I would say that with every event I did, and I did over 100, it was quite amazing how many requests I was getting. It would be like anywhere between 10 and 30% about characters and settings and story. And the rest was like, tell us about this issue. What can we do? Does it happen here? Does it happen to white women too? How many countries is this happening, you know, around the world? And, you know, and so I was able, you know, because I had all that information, I could say, yes, it happens to white women too. Yes, it happens in 90 countries around the world. You haven't heard about it because it's so taboo. And, you know, when you're a survivor of this violence, you're also told to shut up about it. So, you know, I was really shocked at, like, this novel became, it opened doors to having conversations that before were so hard to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you championed it. You did warrior work. You mentioned that, you know, you're a spiritual seeker. When your creative work comes in, do you feel like you're channeling people's stories, that, you know, there's downloads of experiences and stories from past lives or present or anything that is coming? And that's why, like you said, once the creative is flowing, there's no stopping it. And it, for me, when you were explaining that, it almost feels like a channeling that is taking place.
Yeah, and I don't really understand, you know, what exactly is being channeled. Sometimes it feels like it's somebody else talking to me. Sometimes it feels like someone is nudging me along and giving me ideas. I had this one experience, which was like the most wacky, with my third novel. I had written it, submitted it to my agent, you know, gave it to my writing group, and they all were, had these vague kind of like, this isn't working, maybe put this away. My agent back then said, I give you permission to stop writing this. It was like, I was like, oh my goodness, it's that bad. Okay, so I did put it away for a while. And then one day when I was riding my bike around High Park, you know, those big rolling hills, I was careening down a hill, and I heard this very, like, loud voice in my head that said, I am your missing character. This is my story. And I was like, no, I don't want to write about that. That doesn't fit. How am I going to fit you in? Like, no. But I, you know, I do have a sense of, like, what are you going to do? Like, you just have to surrender to these things, right? So yeah. I started writing his story. I trashed a whole backstory for the character. And he did seamlessly enter into the narrative in this way that shouldn't make any sense. Where did he come from? I don't know. Thank you. Thank you, whoever you were.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like channeling. And I understand that can be a challenging discussion to speak when you're in therapy work and being like the two of, okay, well, this profession would say, oh, something's going, but that doesn't exist. And there's something going, and it's like, no, I there's something. So navigating those different worlds. And for you, yeah, don't have to say it. For me, that's what it sounds like, that there is some channeling and our mind can go to other dimensions. Doesn't mean that we always have, yes, to listen to those other dimensions yet. I don't know if you're aware of the four agreements.
Remind me what they are. I think I've read them, but yeah.
Yeah, it's your word is impeccable. Do not assume. Don't take things personal. And also do your best. Yet in there, they speak about the mind and how the mind can go to different dimensions. But it doesn't mean that you always have to listen to those voices. And so when we're able to listen, there's that. I believe that that's why some of the great creatives is because they allow their mind to go to other dimensions and allow the channeling of information to come through that is unexplainable. Because when you try to explain, it's like, I don't know, I just go with, yes, whatever the flow, and it works out in a way that I would have not been able to create on my own. I wouldn't have made, yes, sense.
And it's fun. And yes, it is. It would be like if some very conservative psychotherapist was listening, they'd be like, well, you know, this person has a fertile imagination, or maybe it actually came from their subconscious, which is also, that also happens. You can write from your subconscious. But yeah, we're not supposed to marry spirituality and psychotherapy.
Which I think is the most ridiculous thing, because it's both the same.
I think
yet
so.
I'm like, in my opinion, I am not on that side of the fence of red tape with that profession. Yet I like you said, I do believe they're 10 years back. Or actually they created a new way, and they need to go back to seeing that medicine and spirituality were together. And yes, for some reason, capitalism separated that. And now we need to come back and unify it. And that's where you were doing that. You were allowing yourself to be that vessel to unify where spirituality and medicine are coming back together again.
We are seeing it in the field. Like, you know, there's more mindfulness. There's more energy, psychology. But anyone who is trying to validate that is using these very kind of standard, and, you know, I'm glad that they're doing it because we need validation, but, you know, they're finding evidence that is fine. It's good. But how do we find evidence? How do we find proof for any of this? Right. I mean, they can say there's evidence that it helps people. They can say that there's evidence, you know, it's best practice, whatever. But they have to walk a very fine line, I think, these folks.
Yeah. And I think it's just because the human mind always wants to analyze and make sense of things and wants to find the answer. And, you know, just to suspend it and be like, you're not going to have an answer to this. You just have to surrender to a higher power that some things are just not going to be able to be explained. And be okay with that. Yet the analyzing mind is always, no, there has to be an answer. We have to find where it began and where the roots and all that. I'm going to bring you into a reflective question. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you to bring your awareness from right now back to your 18-year-old self. And you're able to give your 18-year-old self three words. It could either be in a form of a sentence or three individual words. And these words are what is going to help this 18-year-old self travel through the journey to right now.
Follow your nose. And what that means is, and I did some of that at 18, but it's, I think sometimes these opportunities are presented to us, like, and we need to say yes to them. And it'll take us to the next thing that we need to say yes to, and so on and so on and so on. And we don't have to be afraid of what that next thing is. Yeah.
I like that. This is the most unique answer I've had. Very unique. And I love it because it is true.
When I think about some of the ways I didn't do that back then, I did to some extent. I was a brave young person, but my writing life got tossed aside around that time. Mm. And I didn't pick it up until like my late 20s. So there was a decade where I did other creative things, but my own individual writing life stagnated because I thought, oh, I'm not really allowed to do that. I've got to be focusing on other things. I've got to focus on the career stuff. I've got to, you know, I don't know. I was following my nose in other directions and maybe leaving behind and not paying attention to what I could have been also doing with my writing at that time.
Yeah. For myself, I know in my, you know, my 20s, it was, my intuition was there, yet I wasn't listening to it enough. I was still being really drawn by the world, and the world had all my answers, and not really knowing how to really trust my intuition when it was saying something, but everybody else is saying, no, and it's like, and if I would have listened to that more, I know the trajectory of my life would be different. Yet, mm-hmm. you know, as you know, your experiences are your experiences and you honor them. And once you know better, you learn. And so I highly know that when my intuition is saying something, it's like, do not go not listening to it, because you're going to kick yourself after. And it won't be a nice feeling that you have with yourself that, why didn't you listen from within first? And that's what I'm hearing you say a little bit with follow your nose, mm-hmm. like allow that curiosity to be there, listen mm-hmm. to that intuition. Yet, you know, the world lures us into these spaces where what we know within is not valid, and it's mm-hmm. it doesn't have any sense, and you don't know what you're doing, where it's like, mm-hmm. actually, this is the whole experience, that I'm not supposed to know what I'm doing, and I'm to learn and explore.
Yeah. And sometimes I said no to opportunities that were right in front of me that probably would have been really enriching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where can the listeners find you?
Maybe the easiest place is Instagram, if people are on Instagram. Also, I have a website, farzanadoctor.com, and Instagram, it's just at farzanadoctor. I'm on Twitter, but we don't know what's going to happen with Twitter.
That is like a train wreck happening right now. But yeah.
Yes. And I'm still on there, just kind of watching to see what's going to happen. It makes me curious. But yeah, those are the places. And my books are like, you can kind of find them in all the mainstream places and the indie bookstores. A couple of them are available on audiobook, which is really cool. The poetry is available on audiobook too.
Is it your voice?
For little bits of it. And then the rest is an actor who does a much better job than I do.
Would you like to leave anything for the listeners?
What to leave for the listeners? Maybe just a little bit more about not compartmentalizing the self so much, because that has been so much of my work decompartmentalization of various aspects of myself, to just be like, this is who I am, and I can be all of these things all together. I think also that when we write about these important things, when we speak these truths, we are doing a service to the larger world. And so keep doing that if you're in the practice of doing that, whether that's on a large level or, you know, a level that is within your own family or friend groups. We need to be speaking to these deeper emotional things that are happening in our lives.
Do you mind sharing what your intention was when we had the meditation?
It was the first thing I said around the kindness to self. You know, one of the things that happens sometimes when I am doing podcasts is, you know, just kind of charging ahead, because it's part of the work of like promoting the work and all of that. And I knew that this would be a different kind of podcast. So I thought, you know, what would it be like to just kind of enter the space, not in such a I don't know, businessy way, but in a way that's just like, let's have a conversation and be kind to my own heart.
I hope mm-hmm. I've provided that space that there was mm-hmm. kindness.
You have. Thank you. Yeah, I feel like we could just keep on talking. There's so many things to talk about still, but
there is. And hopefully you'll come back as a guest. I hope you'll come back as a guest. Thank you again for offering us the most valuable thing that you could give, which is your time. And I appreciate, for the listeners, if you haven't noticed, well, you wouldn't notice anyways, this is the first time that me and Farzana have interacted and we have met each other. We're visually seeing each other on the Zoom. And the way the conversation went, it was like we have known each other for a very long time just because of the safety and being able to have that dialogue. And I felt like it was a dance in this conversation. So whoever is listening, and if you're all the way to this far into the podcast, I thank you. And I hope that you joined into the dance that me and Farzana have done together. And I really just want to thank you for the warrior work that you are bringing into the world. It is greatly appreciated, Farzana.
Thank you so much. And thank you again for doing this podcast.
Remember to be kind to yourself.
Thank you for making it all the way to the end. I appreciate you and your time. If you found anything of value in this conversation, please share out the podcast, share it through your emails, social media, and also please like and subscribe so that we can grow the community and expand the dialogue. Until next time, remember, be kind and playful with yourself.